I still remember the first lectureship I ever attended. I can remember not really knowing exactly how lectureships worked as far as the speakers went. And I remember watching, I don't remember who the speaker was, I remember who the lectureship director was. Not that that really matters, I wouldn't call his name out. Anyway, not that it matters, but I remember sitting there and watching the speaker speak and listening, and I wasn't sitting too far behind the lectureship director there, and so I could see him after the lesson had been going a little while. He does this, and I thought, well, that's not really nice. And what was worse was a few minutes after that, he got up and sat right there while the guy was speaking, and I thought, well, that's just rude. Of course, you know, I've grown up a little bit since then, wised up a little bit, and I'm a smart guy, I figured it out. But I say that to say that because Wayne told me yesterday that what happened with the schedule change, and he said, so you're going to be the last speaker. And I said, oh, so when Bill or Jerry does this to me and this, I can just ignore it. And he smiled and he said, yeah. So my apologies, but we're not on a time crunch here anymore. So you're stuck. But I'll do my best. I'll do my best. Well, in this lectureship, we've been talking about and studying and analyzing our weapons, or our enemy's greatest weapons against us, against our families, against the church, and against the nation. And this afternoon, we get to talk about one more, and that's divorce. You know, yesterday I was here for Nathan Brewer's lesson, and afterwards he and I were talking. And he said, you know, I'm so glad that that lesson's over. He says, that's one of the most depressing sermons I ever had to prepare or present. And he said, I think next year I'm going to ask them to do the fruits of the Spirit or something. And it is. I said, well, that's exactly how I feel. We're talking about divorce and how divorce attacks, wounds, and destroys our families. And I said, I feel the exact same way. I'm going to be glad when this is over. But the fact is that we have to talk about these things. It'd be like an army going into battle without knowing a thing about its enemy or the weapons that it's going to use. We need to know if we're going to be able to defeat our enemy. Well, every one of us have been touched by divorce. I'm fortunate to say that I've never really had to deal with it on an extremely personal level. Fortunate that my parents were never divorced, giving me a good example. And my wife and I, long before we were ever married, discussed this and said that divorce would never be an option for us. Whatever happens, we'll be able to work it out. And so when I think about the worst thing that I've ever gone through, it was just a breakup in college. A girl I dated for about a month and thought, this is it. You know, I found the one. And, a month later, she dropped me like a bad habit. And I tell you what, though, I was hurt. I thought that my life was almost over. I just was sure this was the one. Now, think about that when you have gone ahead and married this person. This person really is supposedly the one. And now that person chooses to say goodbye. There's a lot of pain involved with that, and we need to be aware of that. We in the church need to recognize that, yes, God's law on marriage, divorce, and remarriage is strict, and we need to be teaching it. We also need to recognize, though, that people who are affected by a divorce have gone through a lot of pain and suffering. We need to be there for them. And so that's one of the things we're going to be talking about this afternoon. 1 Peter 4, verse 8. In that passage, Peter said, be ye all of one mind, having compassion one of another. Love as brethren, be full of pity, be courteous. Again, in 1 Peter 4, verse 8, he says something similar. He says, above all things, have fervent love among yourselves, for love will cover a multitude of sins. And there are tons of other passages that we can talk about along those same lines, but this is why we want to talk about this topic. Is love. And we're talking about agape love. I heard one of the speakers yesterday give the good definition of agape love. It's seeking the best interest of one another. Seeking the best interest of somebody else. And that's hard for us to do, but when it comes to this, we need to do it. And so as we talk now about divorce, the scope of the lesson is really not about God's law on divorce and remarriage, but it would be appropriate and necessary for us to touch on it. So it's going to be the quickest hopefully the quickest overview of the topic, at least that I've ever done. But in Matthew chapter 19, verses 3 through 12, we have God's law on marriage and divorce and remarriage. It was binding on the people of Christ's day, and it's binding on us today. When, in essence, we says, when a man and woman are married, they become one flesh and are bound to one another for life. In verse 6, he says, "What God hath joined together, let not man put asunder." That "let not man put asunder" is a command. And it's a command that can be broken just like any other commandment. And when we do break it, we sin, 1 John 3, verse 4. Therefore, when we divorce, there is sin. There is never an exception to the rule. There is always sin in every divorce. There can be an innocent party, but there can never be two. There is always sin. But when we talk about exceptions, that's what people want to talk about. And so what is the exception to the rule? And what about remarriage? Well, we find that if we were to ask people in the world today, if there are any exceptions, are there any exceptions to the rule that you cannot remarry if you've been divorced? Well, of course there are. Anything you want is an exception. No fault divorce is how we would phrase that. But what does Jesus say when we ask him? Well, in Matthew 19, verse 9, he says, "Whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery. And whoso marrieth her which is put away doth commit adultery." And so he makes it very clear. Here is the law, and there is only one exception. One reason whereby a person is authorized by God to be divorced and then remarry again with God's approval. And so the person who asks, and people do ask, you come across these situations all the time where somebody has been divorced, maybe they're remarried, maybe they're thinking about it. And certainly our lesson could be filled with examples that people, situations that people get themselves into. But what I found is the best way to handle it is to ask one question in return. And that is, why were you divorced? What is the reason for your divorce? If the answer is anything other than my spouse committed fornication and that is why I divorced him or her, then this person is not entitled to remarry. And there are no other exceptions to that. But what if they do? If this person chooses to remarry, he will be committing adultery. And of course, Greek tense there means continuous action. We understand that. As long as he is in that relationship, they are committing adultery. He does not have entitlement to that. And so what are his options then? Well, 1 Corinthians 7:11, Paul gave the answer to that, to the hypothetical woman there. He says, a woman who has been divorced, understandably, without fornication, says that she should either remain unmarried or be reconciled to her spouse. And so you see two options there, and that tells us something also, because a lot of times that I've heard people in the church say, well, this person's an unscriptural marriage, or they have an unscriptural divorce, they automatically have to reconcile with their first spouse. And that's not true. They have the option to remain unmarried. And the fact is there are many people in the church today. The more I talk to people, the more I found out that there are people in the church today who are doing this, who are remaining unmarried, because that's the option that they have. Maybe they don't have the option available to them to reconcile to their first spouse, and so they are remaining unmarried. And that's what we want to talk about. What about that person? What needs does that person have as a now single again person in this world and in the church? And so what we want to focus on this afternoon, two things. One, the effects of divorce, and two, coping with divorce. Well, the effects on divorce. Divorce affects so many people in so many different ways. We don't have time to cover all of them, so we'll hit just some of the obvious ones. The spouses and the children. Of course, it affects all family members, but those are the ones we'll look at. First of all, how does divorce affect the spouses. Now remember, as we do this, we're talking about Satan's weapon here. We're talking about how he destroys families. Well, there's no better way for Satan to destroy family. There's no way for Satan to destroy anything or anybody other than with sin. And that is the first and most extreme effect of divorce, as I've already mentioned, is sin. Again, Matthew 19:6, what God hath joined together, let not man put asunder. Therefore, to do it is to break his law. And so in every divorce, you've either got one party who has committed fornication, or you've got no fornication at all, and therefore you have two people who do not have entitlement to remarry. And so this is sin. It's the first thing that we have to recognize is that when sin exists and it is unrepented of, then it will lead to death. It will lead to spiritual death. And we ought to love them and have concern for them to teach them those things. Secondly, quite simple, it's a pain. Pain is one of the effects of divorce. Now, many people will say, well, it was a very mild divorce. You know, we're still friends or whatever. But there are still problems. There's still destruction that has happened there. Think for a moment about, let's say, a woman who has not committed fornication. Her husband has not committed fornication, but her husband wants a divorce. And she is doing everything she can to try to work that out. But unfortunately, because of no-fault divorce laws, she has no recourse. No-fault, we're familiar with it. No-fault divorce. It means for any reason at all, we hear it all the time, Hollywood, some other couples divorcing, citing irreconcilable differences. Well, they're not irreconcilable. They're just choosing not to reconcile. But that's another topic. But there's pain involved. Imagine this person now. The person that she has committed her life to. The person on whom she relies for the fulfillment of every need that she has. The person whose life is bound up with hers has pulled himself away and says, I don't love you anymore. Maybe I never really loved you at all. Imagine the devastation this person feels. And it can be a man or a woman. Either can feel this and do feel this. And so imagine that devastation. Imagine how easy it is to seek a new relationship, something to fill the void, even when this person is not entitled to that. Well, regardless of the circumstances, the church needs to love these victims of divorce. Satan has hit them with an attack that has destroyed their families. And think about that. Think about how deserted this person may feel. The last thing this person needs is to feel further desertion by the church. The church needs to be there for these people, to help them, to teach them, to study with them, and to just be a comfort to them, to be a friend. But we'll talk more about that in a moment when we get to coping with divorce. I'm going to talk about some statistics here. They're not always the most exciting things, but I think it's important to hit on some of these. Empty feelings of abandonment can lead to other problems, other physical and emotional problems. According to a study of over 5,000 married adults in the late 80s by the Institute for American Values, their conclusion was that there is no evidence to support the false idea that divorce brings happiness. According to their studies, the unhappy couples who divorced were no happier when that was done than those unhappy couples who decided to remain unmarried. This next quote comes from an article called The Happy Divorcee? From the Focus on the Family website. It says, divorce leads to many ills, including poverty, depression, poor health, and a greater likelihood of suicide. Divorced men have higher rates of mental illness and death due to accidents and suicide than married men. Also, divorced fathers who do not live with their children are more likely to engage in behaviors that compromise their health. Another study found that divorced mothers are less able to provide the same level of emotional support to their children than the married mothers were. These things ought to be understandable to us. We probably don't need studies to show this, but these things prove it. Glenn T. Stanton, senior analyst for marriage and sexuality at Focus on the Family, wrote about the effects of no-fault divorce on these divorcees. He said, large number of divorced adults were less secure, were failing to put their lives back together, and entered affairs and cohabiting relationships that were just as troubled, as if not more so, as the newly discarded marriage. Domestic violence increased dramatically. Some entered new marriages that broke up faster and as tragically as the previous ones. I imagine every one of us have personal examples that where we've seen things like this happen. And we find out then that happiness after divorce is far, far from guaranteed. One of the other sad results of divorce, sad effects of divorce on family, is lack of discipline of children. Lack of discipline. Already feeling an abandonment from their spouse, it's very easy for a divorced person to feel abandonment from their children if they try to discipline them. Recently, I was able to attend a town meeting in Yukon, where I live and preach. Town meeting on underage drinking. And there was a gentleman there, a young man who was, I won't give you his name, but you would all know him. He is a very well-known former football star here from Oklahoma. And he had some problems with drinking, and so he was there to talk to the people, specifically the kids, about underage drinking. And as he was fielding questions from the audience afterwards, one person said, "What was the most enabling factor in regards to your drinking?" His answer, there was a short pause there, but not because he had to think about it. You could see the look on his face. He knew the answer right away, and he was just thinking on how to phrase it. He said, "Sadly, it was my mother." He said, "My mother's a great woman, good godly woman. Never ever did I see a drink of alcohol in her hand. She would never have allowed me to drink. But unfortunately, she and his father had been divorced. And during this time in his childhood, specifically early high school, I believe he said, he would spend 1 week with his father and 1 week with his mother, alternating week to week. And his father couldn't care less what he did. He would let him drink. Of course, his mother did not want him to, but would not forbid it because she did not want to lose him to his father. If dad lets him do it, then mom has to let him do it. And I know we've seen that, those types of things so often. And without meaning to, this young man gave us a great lesson on one of the many horrible results of divorce. And that's parents don't discipline their children. And I imagine that, I know I've got several other pieces of information I could share on that, but time probably doesn't allow it, so I'll move on. But what about the children? How does divorce affect children? Well, I think we know that as well. But study after study has shown that children of divorcees struggle with depression, confusion, guilt, drugs and alcohol, bad behavior, poor school performance, psychiatric issues, and even suicide. In the same article I was quoting from a moment ago from Glenn T. Stanton, he continued talking about the effects of no-fault divorce on children. He said, "Children fared even worse. Many of them described their childhoods as ending the day their parents announced the divorce. Others described being scarred for life. They reported being crippled by anxiety, possessed by anger, and disoriented by fear of abandonment. Their behavior, grades, and physical and mental health suffered. They were different children. In fact, they didn't see themselves as children any longer. Divorce forced them to become adults, sometimes before they even became teens." Stanton went on to say that it wasn't just in a handful of studies that these conclusions came, but in mountains of academic studies. He said one of the most impressive of these studies is Judith Wallerstein's. She began studying 131 children of various ages as they experienced divorce in the early 70s and followed them for 25 years. So 131 children of divorce over 25 years, and her conclusion was that divorce, quote, is a deeply painful experience for children. They endured more depression, greater learning difficulties, more aggression towards parents and teachers, and were 2 to 3 times more likely to be referred for psychological help at school as their peers from intact families. Children of divorce are far more likely to struggle academically, engage in drug and alcohol, et cetera. And then the last one she mentioned was, and have a greater likelihood to divorce themselves. Now imagine in the world, that's probably the least of the concerns of people. All the other problems are a lot greater. I tend to think that maybe that one's the worst of all, because that says that divorce perpetuates itself from generation to generation. Certainly, David Popino, a professor of sociology at Rutgers University, made similar comments. Marriages of children of divorce actually have a much higher rate of divorce than the marriages of children from intact families. A major reason for this, now we don't need him to tell us this, I think we'd know it, but he says a major reason for this is that children learn about marital commitment or permanence by observing their parents. Of course, if mom and dad got divorced, apparently marriage is not really that important. You can get married and divorced. Who knows how many times I'll be married in my life? It doesn't really matter. And that's sad. Another study, listen to this, of 2,500 children over 30 years, a similar one to the one we just talked about, said that one of the surest ways to avoid divorce is not to marry a child of divorce. What a sad statement to make. She goes on and says, children of divorce are not marital prospects. I mean, isn't that horrible? Were your parents divorced? Well, guess what? You're not a good candidate for marriage then. I mean, what a horrible thing to say. These children need our help. These children need our teaching. The congregations where we attend need to teach on this so they will understand it, because they're not going to learn it, unfortunately, from their parents or from people in the world. There are other problems that children face about having to choose which parent you're going to go with, choose which parent you're going to love more. One lady wrote an article about watching her daughter. She herself had been divorced, watching her young daughter, I think it was graduate fifth grade, something like that. And so as all the students walked across the little stage and got their little diplomas, they would walk down and go hug their parents. Well, she walks down and looks at Dad and then looks at Mom and pauses there for a moment with a fearful look in her eye, not knowing whom to go to. And she said, the mother said she hated that. She couldn't believe it. And she saw it again later in high school when the same daughter won some sort of athletic race. Same thing, crossed the tape and won and looked at Dad and looked at Mom and didn't know where to go. Children should never have to make those types of decisions. Well, there's several other statistics we could get into. There's statistics that I included in the lectureship book that talk about physical health and how much healthier children of intact families are than children of divorce. Sad comment. It talks about children or female children who became unmarried mothers. The number, the percentage of those was so much higher than those in divorced families than those that came from intact families. And we figure out that's because divorce steals from a child his God-ordained right to parents, to good, godly parents who will teach him. And so divorce destroys everybody in the family. There are certainly other family members and friends that are affected by divorce. God is certainly affected by divorce. Divorce is a rejection of His divine plan for man and woman. It's saying that God's plan wasn't good enough. It's sin, and that hurts God. And if it's not repented of, it results in spiritual death, and that certainly hurts God who wants all men to be saved. 1 Timothy 2:4. Let's talk a little bit about coping with divorce, because that's really what we want to hit on. Because we can talk about the problems, but if we don't talk about the solution, then we're not really doing ourselves any good. But coping with divorce, how can spouses cope with divorce? And I've said this already, I'll say it again, but the first and foremost issue that you need to deal with is sin. We've talked about sin being a problem and divorce being sin. Make sure you're not living in sin. Make sure you're not in a relationship that God hath not joined together. Get your life right with God. One who puts away his spouse for any reason other than fornication and marries again is living in sin, living in adultery. And so you need to get that right. And that's the most important step. Secondly, you need to strengthen your own faith in God. Don't let anything encourage you to pull away from God. You know, we can let anything be a discouragement like that. And so we need to strengthen our faith. Strengthen your faith in God through prayer. Talk to God. Let Him speak back to you in His Bible. Bible study is so important. You need to spend time in that. We could spend all day talking about the necessity of Bible study. Thirdly, church attendance. Don't use this as an excuse not to be in worship. The church needs you there, and you need to be there. And so church attendance. Thirdly, responsibility to your children. Parents who have been divorced, you're not relieved of your responsibility to raise your children. The children still need it, and parents still have to administer it. Ephesians 6:4 still directs fathers to raise up their children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Titus 2:4 still directs mothers to love their children. And Proverbs 22:6 still teaches us to train up children in the way that they should go. And so be a good parent to your child. Teach them. Encourage them. Tell them that they are not to blame for the divorce. Children suffer. Children of divorce suffer from the problem of guilt, thinking that they are responsible for that divorce. Don't let that happen. Tell them how much you love them and tell them every day that they are not to blame for what has happened. If you are dealing with custody issues and maybe it's your day or whatever, you have a meeting to be with your children, don't be late. Children pick up on things. And again, when they are already suffering from guilt, then that does not help. Make sure they understand how much you love them. And then lastly, on spouses, look for and expect support from the church. We're going to talk about that a little bit more, but don't think that church members don't care. We do care. And we should always be concerned and be caring of our brothers and sisters. And so look for and expect support from your brothers and sisters. And so that leads me to the next part of coping with divorce. For the church, how do we handle divorce? What should we do? What can the church do? Well, if you would open to Galatians chapter 6. In Galatians chapter 6, verse 1 and 2, there are several passages we could talk about along these lines and what the church can do in any type of situation. Certainly, the book of 1 John comes to mind, and those passages on loving one another in the brotherhood. But maybe next in line, I'd pick Galatians 6, 1 and 2, where he says, "Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such a one in spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. Bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ." And so we see two main commands here, restore and bear. So he says, if a brother's overtaken in a fault, which might be somebody living in sin, in the pathway of divorce, he says, first of all, we need to restore such a one in the spirit of meekness. Restore there means to repair or mend. Has the idea of bringing somebody to the point of repentance. And so that includes teaching. The most important step in helping a victim of divorce is making sure this person is not living in a sinful situation. That'd go for anything. It's helping people to get out of a sinful situation. So that's the first and foremost thing that we need to do is talk about, teach about the sin of divorce and the remarriage that comes after it that is so often a sinful relationship. Second thing he says there, bear ye one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. Bear means to lift or endure. And the burdens here that he's talking about, because if we were to go on down the next few verses, he talks about bearing your own burdens. And the idea here is that there are burdens in this life that we should not have to bear alone, weights that we should not have to endure alone. And this certainly is one of them. This is one of the benefits of being a member of Christ's church, is that we have the brothers and sisters to encourage us. And when you and I as members of the church fail, we leave our brothers and sisters out to dry, so to speak. We fail them. Mark chapter 10, verses 29 and 30. In that passage, Jesus says, "There is no man that hath left house or brethren or sisters or father or mother or wife or children or lands for my sake in the Gospels, but he shall receive a hundredfold now in this time." Notice the "now in this time." He's not talking about heaven here. I see that he's talking about the church. We're supposed to have a lot of blessings in this church. When you lose a family situation, you gain even more in the church. I look out and I don't know how many people are here today, but a lot more than is in my immediate family. And so if my family were not members of the church and I had to leave them and be considered an outcast because I was a Christian, I'd look around and see a lot more family members right here than I am leaving behind. And I think that's what he's talking about here. So when we fail in this area, we're not giving Christ's brothers and sisters what he has promised them. And so we need to be aware of that. Well, what are some specifics? When we talk about a lot of things, when we preach, we talk about a lot of general ideas, things that we need to do. Be of a help, be an encouragement. But I like to get as specific as I can and present maybe some ideas. And here's where I might fall a little bit short, because I'm probably not the best person to come up with some ideas of things that we can do to help victims of divorce. But I threw some in. I asked my family members and members of the church there in UConn if you thought of any other ideas that we can do to be a help to people who have experienced divorce. And these are just some basic things that we came up with. One of the first things I think of would be to ask. And that's pretty simple thing to do. But people are struggling with things all the time that we won't know about if we don't ask. You know, some of us deal with things and maybe there's some things that I need. Maybe there's some things that I would really like to ask one of you to help me with. But what happens so often? I'm uncomfortable asking for help. Well, I think we relate to that. And I imagine there are members of the church who are victims of divorce, who are struggling with things, maybe just need some basic help, but they're a little embarrassed to ask. So ask them. And secondly, really mean it. People can see through formalities and insincerity. We ask, if you're anything you need, be sure and let me know as we run out the door. But really mean it. Really mean it when you ask somebody to help. If you can help them. But some other things, just some basic things. Get to know this person. How many members of the church do you see all the time, but you never stop and get to know? This goes for anything. Get to know your brothers and sisters. They'll have needs that you can help with. And certainly victims of divorce. You see, sometimes maybe we place a stigma on members of the church who are victims of divorce. Even the innocent ones. We might look down at them as second-class citizens, because we don't really understand that even though they have been involved in a sinful situation, maybe they've done what's right and God has forgiven them. They are forgiven and God has forgotten that. But now they are living in situations where they need our help. And so don't look down on them or treat them as second-class citizens. Don't place that stigma on them. Get to know them. Spend time together. If someone's feeling depressed, be a friend to them. Break through that barrier. You may not be the best comforter in the world, but you can certainly try. Another thing you can do, if this person has maybe they've been through an unscriptural divorce, and so they are remaining unmarried because they are not entitled to remarry, encourage that person. Express your admiration and appreciation to that person for being obedient to God by remaining unmarried. Remember that the rest of the world tells them otherwise. Anywhere they go, unfortunately sometimes, even in the church, they'll be told that they can remarry even though God has not authorized it. And they are refusing to do it because they put God above anybody else. So encourage them and express your appreciation. Study the Bible together. Certainly we know 2 Peter 1 verse 3 that says, His divine power hath given unto us all things that pertain unto life and godliness. And so certainly, all things that we need to be an encouragement to them, all things that they need to get through the problems that they're struggling with, can be found in Scripture. And so let's encourage them in that. Involve them in a personal Bible study. When you sit down and study with someone, so many times we'll have maybe what we call a silent partner, somebody who can take some notes. This is an easy job for anybody who can simply write some notes. And it's a great way to involve people who may not otherwise be involved. Help with their children. Again, one of those things where you may need to ask what kind of help they need, but ask them what kind of things that they're looking for, what kind of problems, what kind of things are clogging their day. Maybe it's something as simple as offering to give one of their children a ride to football or a band practice. Maybe it's encouraging them with this problem of lack of discipline. Maybe it's encouraging this parent as they discipline their child and back them up when they do it. Look for ways that maybe you could be a role model to their children. If you are a man and this person has lost his father through divorce, try to be a good Christian role model to him. Include him in certain things that you might be doing. Simply talk to him, ask him questions, ask him how school is going, whatever you can do to make him feel important. You have no idea how far that can go. Studies have shown what a benefit that is to young children. And if you have personally gone through a divorce, especially if you're one who is now having to remain unmarried because of it, you can be a huge support to those who are now going through it. You can be a huge source of friendship and family and support and love and compassion and caring. And so don't pass up that opportunity. The scope of the lesson is not about preventive measures either, but I think it would be very appropriate to touch on maybe one or two of them. Because as we talk about this sermon and really the theme of the lectureship, and that's recognizing our enemy's weapons, studying and analyzing them, it's also about learning how to defeat Satan and his weapons. And so the way to defeat divorce, first of all, is teach about it. Teach your children. Teach at the church. Ask your preacher to preach on the topic if he is not. But secondly, what can you do in your own relationship? You can grow together. What is the biggest problem in relationships, in any relationship, but specifically marriage, that causes divorce? I would say it's lack of communication. It's growing apart, as we say. I think that's probably another way of saying irreconcilable differences. We're growing apart. And so you have to work to grow together. Think about all the best friends that you've ever had in your life from the time that you were in kindergarten up. How many of those people are still in your life? How many of those people are still your best friends? Why is it that we have somebody that we call our best friend, but maybe a few years later, they're not in our life anymore? It's because we grow apart, because we don't have two people trying to stay together. That's what's necessary in a marriage. Two people who love, agape love one another, put the other one first, seek the other one's best interest, and strive to grow together. Secondly, be careful who you confide in. There's nothing wrong with friends, but certainly when you have friends of the opposite sex, be careful who you are confiding in. Something that starts out very innocently that may never end in any kind of affair can end in a divorce because you've put all of your effort and all of your sharing into somebody else without ever even noticing. Because when you share something, think about when you need to share something, something's on your mind and you share it with somebody, kind of relieves you, doesn't it? And you don't need to then go home and share it with your spouse. And how much of your life is slipping right by your spouse because you won't share with them? Be careful who you confide in. Note those things that the two of you have in common and focus on them. Spend more time together doing them. Resolve that divorce will never be an option. We will always work through whatever problems we face. And then, of course, love one another. Agape love, seek best interest. Well, in closing, let me just say, divorce, we know, is a very, very painful experience for all its victims. It perpetuates family problems and family destruction even from generation to generation like a cancer. And Satan is happy. Satan is proud. Satan won a wonderful victory when no-fault divorce came about. And so let's do our best to defeat that. Let's do our best to teach against it, to prevent it. Let's do our best to teach our children by demonstrating the love that Christian men and women, fathers and mothers, spouses should have for one another. Ephesians 5:22, wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands. Ephesians 5:25, husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it. And let us help heal the wounds of our brothers and sisters who have dealt with divorce. Well, this afternoon, we've been talking about and concluding a lectureship on things that attack the family. When the family is attacked and defeated, the church is attacked and defeated, and eventually the nation, just like we've been seeing. But certainly, one of the first things we need to recognize is that before we can ever deal with the problems of the church, is we need to be a member of that church. Nothing else matters until you have had your sins washed away. And we do that, A, by believing. And so if there's anybody here who has not become a Christian, we want to offer this invitation to you. If you would just believe on Jesus Christ, believe that He is the Son of God, and then obey Him. In John 14:15, He says, if you love me, you'll keep my commandments. And He told us that we need to believe on Him. The Scriptures teach us that we need to repent. And there's a lot of problems in repenting because some of us so often don't really want to do that. We don't want to give up the things in our life that we've gotten accustomed to. But we need to put Christ first, put His church first in everything, and say, whatever's in my life that needs to be taken away, I will take it away. That's repentance. We need to make a public confession of Jesus Christ as Lord. And we need to be immersed in water for the forgiveness of our sins, Acts 22:16. At that point, you are a Christian. God adds you to His church, Acts 2:47. You are baptized into one body, the church, 1 Corinthians 12:13, to live faithfully, even unto death, Revelation 2:10. If you are subject to that invitation, we offer this time. If you are here this afternoon as somebody who is struggling, maybe with divorce, maybe something, maybe it's yourself, maybe it's somebody in your family, maybe it's something where you want the prayers of the church. You want to take advantage of the opportunities that you have, of the benefits that the church presents you. We want to do that for you. We don't want to fall down on the job. We want to be there for you. Whatever your need is this afternoon, would you come while we stand and sing?